Tell me when and where you were born and about your family.
I was born in Jersey City, New Jersey on March 6, 1938. I have one sibling, a sister, Kathleen, who is 5 years younger than me. My parents, we lived in a, I guess you would call it a lower middle class family and neighborhood. And it might have been lower than that, actually. My mother's family were, let me think, second generation from Italy, immigrants. And almost all of the family, and they numbered in the many tens, if not hundreds, lived in a section of Jersey City called Marion, which was known locally as Little Italy. My father's family was also second or third generation from Ireland, and they lived up a few streets from Little Italy. The Irish immigration wave had been moved out of the Little Italy neighborhood by the Italians when they came into the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so there was this almost two sections of the Marion area, the Irish and the Italians, and I happened to be a product of that. As I said, my Italian family was very large. All through my grade school and high school years, I continually met people in school who were my cousins, and I was always discovering new cousins. The Irish family were smaller in numbers. My father was a typical Irishman. Excuse me. He spent all of his early years in sports, up until I think he was 35 years old. The best part of his life, I think, from his perspective, was playing sports, football, baseball, some basketball, and then adjourning to the nearest saloon to celebrate their victories or commiserate about their losses. My mother was a very quiet, shy person and continues to be so. She's 96 years old and lives nearby in La Mesa. And my wife and my sister take care of her, although she's very feisty and still living independently.
Marvelous.
Yeah. And so, as I say, I was the product of this Irish-Italian neighborhood. And I found much later in life that I think my I've never pinned this down, but I think my parents thought about me before they thought about marriage, if I could put it like that. And that may have led to the marriage, and I'm going to be in trouble if my mother listens to this. But an aunt divulged this great family secret to me. Mm. I went to grade school at PS number 23 in Jersey City with prior kindergarten and first grade in PS 35. We moved up the hill from Little Italy when I was about 6 years old, so we were getting into the more affluent lower classes, I guess, at that time. Mm-hmm. My early years were pretty much, other than school, devoted to a neighborhood, I'll call it a gang, but there were five or six guys, and our lives consisted solely after school of playing sports. And it went from stickball to stoop ball to punch ball to basketball to football, all in the streets,
right,
on Romaine Avenue in Jersey City. At that time, there weren't many cars in the neighborhood, so we had wide expanses of Romaine Avenue on which to conduct our various sport activities. For the most part, when things were going well with my friends, it was a happy existence. But there was one person in the group. His name was Junior Enton. He was from the one rich family on the block. They actually owned their house. And he was, I guess nowadays we call him a bully.
Mm-hmm.
And he maintained control over our group by, if everyone didn't do exactly what he wanted at all times, you'd be shunned and no one would talk to you. If you got caught walking along the street by yourself, mm-hmm. they'd throw things at you or try to start a fight or whatever. Yeah. So this on and off happy relationship with the neighborhood kids continued up to about the eighth grade. At about that time, I was in one of my shunning periods for some unknown reason, and I had just had enough. And school let out, and as we were walking home, there was a vacant lot, and Junior and his acolytes were following me with various remarks. And I had had enough. I dropped my books, took off my hat, and Junior and I went at it, and must have fought for about a half hour at least. It seemed like many hours, but I think a half hour did it. At the end of the fight, we were both totally exhausted, both bruised and beat up, and just couldn't carry it on, and it was a draw. So that freed me from this thraldom that I had been held in for various periods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready.
Okay, you're ready. Okay, we're going to record again.
About that time at eighth grade, my roots in Little Italy called me back. I had met a friend called Joseph Maticola, who was my best friend through high school years and for some time after. And he convinced me to start going back to a Little Italy, we called it the Little Park, which had a full-length basketball court and bocce courts for the elderly Italian gentlemen who would come in their black suits and string ties and fedoras, or whatever you call those large hats.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go down there on a Saturday morning, perhaps 10 o'clock in the morning. And all throughout Little Italy, there were probably two dozen, maybe three dozen boys my age and older who gathered there, and we stayed on that court until 3, 4, 5 in the afternoon playing basketball. And with the rule that as long as your team won, you stayed on the court. As soon as you lost, you're off and another team came on. It was pretty competitive. A huge influence in my life up through that time was Mount Carmel Catholic Church. You can imagine with an Italian neighborhood, the church had a very strong presence, and they were very clever about it, too. A gentleman named Monsignor Artioli ran the church, and he had the wisdom to set up basketball program for the church. And this happened through many Catholic churches in Jersey City. So there was a league of teams, and they started at the Biddy level, which I think was probably about 8 years old, and went every 2 years you could make a jump to the next level, even playing when you're in college up at the senior level. And we would practice one or two nights a week in the PS23 gym, which the city ran an after-school sports program there. My father happened to be one of the assistant directors part-time of that facility. And we would play our regular basketball games on Sundays against another church team. And it was very clear that unless we had gone to confession that previous Saturday and communion at 9 o'clock Mass that Sunday, you were not about to put your uniform on that day. So we were all a rabid church going group of kids. Going to confession was one of the real stress points of my life. I was a very, very shy person, very quiet person. Had no idea what life was about at this time. My father was said loved hanging out with boys, and even after marriage did that. He could be found in the local Balbo's Tavern or Venezia's Saloon every Saturday and Sunday with his friends, so we rarely saw him. My mother was a very, very shy person. Maybe that's where I got it from. So I had little direction in life, except for the fact I had two wonderful aunts. My Aunt Lucy, who was my grandmother's youngest sister. There was a family of 12 there, with my grandmother being the oldest sibling and Lucy the youngest, and she was about my mother's age. And my Aunt Faye, who was my mother's sister. They took me under their wings, and I spent inordinate amounts of time with them. They were just a godsend in my life.
So, yeah, grammar school, okay. Anything. Okay, I'll...
Okay.
Okay.
Perhaps the greatest revelation of my elementary school years was the fact that ever since I could remember, I could run fast. In fact, I could run faster than anyone, no matter what their age was. And on our block, as part of our regular sports, year-round sports activity, one of the activities, one, we would have a track session in which someone came up with a stopwatch, and we would run around the whole block and time everyone to see who could do it. And I found I could waste everyone any time. And when I was in seventh and eighth grade, I even wasted the high school sprinter of our high school team, who lived in on our block as well. So track running became an amazingly large part of my life. I started running in track meets for our grade school, and when I was about to graduate trade school, all of the Catholic high schools in Jersey City were recruiting me. There was St. Michael's, St. Aloysius, and another one which I can't remember. So there were three Catholic high schools, and there were four public high schools. My high school drew from the Little Italy section, and it was a few miles away from Little Italy, and the area around the high school. This happened to be the Caucasian, the white part of Jersey City. The other three high schools were almost all African American at the time. I chose to go to public high school, Dickinson High School, because all of my Italian friends were going there, all trying out for the basketball team, of course, all taking Italian in class. I took French and never lived it down. I have no recollection of why I chose French, but I did, and this was, I think, held against me in addition to my being half Irish. On that subject, too, the name Albers is Dutch, and we know from family history or word of mouth that it was a Dutch name, but we have no idea where the Dutchman sneaked into the family or when. I'd like to find out sometime. So grade school was a kind of happy place, except for when I was being shunned by the neighborhood gang. Again, my main memories are I discovered I was bright in the very early grades and could do well whenever I wished to. As we got up to 6th, 7th, and 8th grades, my Italian mafia friends, and I say that fondly, we were so much in sports, we were not into academics, to say the least.
Right.
And so my grades started falling off in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I had a wonderful teacher in 5th grade named Miss Walsh, who threw her heart and soul, she was not married, and her whole life was that 5th grade. Mm-hmm. And we had all kinds of, I can't think what the name were, but units, I guess, we put on of the West, in which we'd all make presentations in Western gear. And there were all these theme kinds of things, five or six a year. I remember one where I was in a square dance and actually got to dance with girls, which was amazing to me because I would always run away with them from them at the if any conversation threatened between us. And I made some good friends in grade school that went on to high school. High school, when I went in, I was immediately pounced on by the track coach, And I think I ran my first track meet within 2 weeks of starting high school. And I got second in the city championships in the freshman division. And this was with not having been running that much prior to high school, for being in really good condition. And I was an embarrassment to many people because I did not yet own an athletic supporter. So in my uniform, I just put my shorts over my boxer shorts, which were hanging below the shorts. And that was another thing I never lived down. I really got into track. I was city champion several times in both the dashes and the quarter mile. I was Northern New Jersey champion for 3 years running in the 100 and 200 yard. We did yards then, not meters. And I had all kinds of, our living room at home was, had all kinds of trophies and plaques on the wall, and I had a big box of medals. And my identity then was Harry Albers, the track guy, the city champ. And I was known far and wide throughout the city and made many friends, not only with my Italian comrades, but with all of the African-American competitors on the other schools. And we became very good, highly competitive, but very good friends. And that carried right through college with some of the people, nice. And we all went to Pitt. My academic performance in high school continued downhill from my 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I could pull C's in everything, but I never took my books home. My schedule, my first and second high school year, was two nights a week practice for the church team at the recreation center, two nights of ball games with a recreation league team that I was on. My Saturdays were track meets. My Sundays were basketball games for the church. And so I was a busy person. I got home from track practice on a typical week at 5, 6 o'clock, had a quick dinner, put my sneakers on, ran over to the gym, and basketball started until 9:20, I think the gym closed, or 9:30. Then I'd run home and had a snack and into bed. My books were safely ensconced in my locker at high school, and I'm not sure they ever saw my house those first 2 years. My awakening came in my junior year when I had a meeting with my advisor, Mr. Spatz. We all had to do this. I still remember the conversation. He said something like, "Okay, Albers, what are you going to do with your life after high school?" Uh-huh. And I said, "Well, go to college." And he picked up what I guess was my transcript, looked at it and laughed and said, "No, you're not." He said, "You wouldn't even get close to a college." That just shocked the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really knocked me. I had never, until that time, thought that I had to actually make an investment in getting into college. I had never seen a college.
Yeah.
There was a St. Peter's College two blocks up from my street, right on the busiest street in Jersey City, Hudson Boulevard, and I walked past it, but I knew it was St. Peter's College, but I never went in. Didn't look like what I thought a college looked like. There was no grass anywhere. I just had never thought about college. So that meeting with my advisor was followed by my track coach, a wonderful man named Phil Murphy, who said, "Hey, Harry, you know, you have a chance to get a track scholarship, but not with these grades." And again, that was a cold water dashed on me. And I took it seriously, particularly Mr. Murphy's thoughts, because he said he'd work with me on a scholarship if I got my act together. So it's not easy to believe, but overnight I decided to become a scholar. And I brought my books home. I studied after the gym. I don't think I gave up much of my sports, but I found time somehow to hit the books. And my grades went up drastically, to the point that by my senior year, I was in my English class, I was I proudly sat in the last row of the classroom, which Miss Cook had established as the scholars' row. And there were only six or seven of us there. And she would conduct her class by firing questions to the rest of the class. And if no one could answer the question, she chose someone from her scholars' row to answer. And if you missed it, you were no longer in the scholars' row. So I worked my butt off to stay there. I also got interested in math for some reason, which had been my nemesis up until then. And a wonderful teacher named Ms. Nadell took me under her wing and said, Harry, I can't believe how well you're starting to do. I want you to join the math club. I didn't know there was a math club. Mm-hmm. And we met every morning at 7 a.m. and did math over and above what the curriculum called for. Mm-hmm. I even got into some calculus. I had another wonderful teacher named Edward McGee. He was short, probably 5'2", well-dressed, always with a three-piece dark suit. I think a watch fob, but I may be imagining that. His hair, black hair, slicked back. And I had him for 3 years of French. And he was a taskmaster. Mm-hmm. He would go around every day with this handful of cards with English phrases on them, hand you one, and you had to go to the blackboard and translate it into French. My sophomore year and even part of my junior year, I did my very best so that he didn't notice me, slump in my seat, look out the window, anything. And for a long time, he ignored me because he knew, I guess he knew how scared I was. Finally, he started giving them to me, and little by little, I started getting them right, which amazed me. And I got really top-notch grades in my senior year. So that Mr. Murphy, true to his word, had made a contact with the coach of the University of Pittsburgh team. His name was Carl Olson. He was a Scandinavian, meanest person I ever met in my life, but took an interest in me. And I had been preceded there by another Dickinson High School runner, an African-American named Thornton Smith. So Thornton was in his junior year already at Pitt. Also, another Smith, no relation, a man named Xenoford Smith, African-American, who had become a really good friend of mine. He went to Lincoln High School, and we regularly competed against one another. And in particular, I competed against his younger brother, Hosea Smith, who he and I were nip and tuck. We had the same talents in the 100, 200, and quarter mile. And when we met, there was hell to pay, is all I can say. We were so close in ability. So Hosea went to a southern school, but Xenoford went to Pitt a half year ahead of me. So I had Thornton and Xenoford at Pitt. And let me think if there's anything else about high school. Oh, I continued to maintain my shyness and being afraid of girls. There was this one girl named Sandra Lewis I knew from grade school all through high school, and for 6 years I debated with myself about asking her for a date. Never got around to it. Was too shy to go to the senior prom. I couldn't work up the courage to ask a girl to go. In fact, even though several girls had dropped very strong hints, I later found out that they wanted me to ask them, but being the obtuse person I was, I just didn't pick up on them. So I think everyone in the senior class, or almost everyone, went, but I went to a track meet to watch it, you know, just so I said I had an excuse for missing the prom, which I guess in some ways I still regret, because I was so backward about it all. I'll mention that quickly, yeah, and then get on to something important.
Okay.
I should mention, I can't emphasize how much track meant to me. Even in high school, I was running in the big Madison Square Garden meets, as the high in special events set up for high school students, and they would be come on the tail end of the college events and the Olympic athletes, actually, who these are the big meets, which still continue today in Madison Square Garden with the same names, the Wanamaker Mile, and I can't remember what all of them were. I had one funny experience. In my junior year, Mr. Murphy, for some reason, stopped coaching the track team, and instead we got a coach named Basil McKenzie, who was a Caribbean Islander who had run in the Olympics and medaled for one of the islands. Right. He took a fondness for me, and when we had one of our events in Madison Square Garden, Mr. McKenzie brought me into the locker room where all of the Olympian-type athletes were dressing. It was a very special dressing room. And here I am, this skinny little high school kid who didn't know which way was up. And here was one of my heroes, one of the greatest runners of all time, named Mal Whitfield, who was a half-miler, had won the half-mile in the Olympics at least once, and I tend to think at least twice. And here was Mal lying on a training table, resting, I guess just contemplating his event. And I saw him there. I walked up to him, and I said something dumb like, "Mr. Whitfield, this is a great honor. Could I please have your autograph?" And I had a pencil and paper. And he just continued to lay there, didn't blink an eye, and after a minute or two, I sheepishly walked away. I was later informed that when he's preparing for a race, no one ever bothers him. So I still remember. I still recall that. On to a really important thing in my life. I said my sister Kathleen was 5 years younger than me. Two doors away from our house on Romaine Avenue was this small apartment house with about 8 families in it. And one of the families was the Cherry family. The father was an immigrant from Scotland when he was in his late teens or early 20s. He worked for the United Fruit Company on the boats that went down to South America. He called them the banana boats. He settled in Jersey City. His wife, Teresa, his name was Archibald Cherry. His wife's name was Teresa Cherry. She came to the United States when her parents immigrated. She was, I guess, in her early teens. Her father was a soccer coach of a Scottish team in Jersey City. And Archibald Cherry played soccer for that team, so met the coach's daughter, Teresa, and the two of them got married. Archie was, I think, at least 10, maybe 15 years older than Tessie. They had 3 children, an older daughter named Nancy, who was about a year older than me, a son named Bob, who was 1 or 2 years younger than me, and a second daughter named Jean, who was 5 years younger than me and my sister's best friend. Jean plays an important part in the story because, I said, I met her when she was 5, I was 10 or 11, and we later married. So we knew one another all our lives. In fact, she always seemed to be underfoot in our house. So we knew one another quite well. Another important influence in my life is Lake Hopatcong, New Jersey. My mother and father, mostly my mother with a loan from her mother, and my Aunt Faye, who was a successful legal secretary and had some money, decided to buy a cottage on Lake Hopatcong in New Jersey. It was about 50 miles outside Jersey City and New York City. Jersey City is just across the river from downtown New York City. In fact, from our high school up on a bluff, we looked right across the river at the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. When I was about 10, my mother and aunt bought this cottage at Lake Opatcong. I still remember it cost $1,600. It was totally a shell of a cottage. There was no insulation, no interior walls. We saw the beams all around. It had an outhouse, which was something new to me. We would go there as soon as school was out. My sister and I, my mother, would go there for this and spend the summer. Aunt Lucy had a car. My family didn't, so she would drop us off there. My Aunt Faye and my Aunt Lucy would come up every weekend and spend their vacations there. But it was, Lake Opatcong was like a miracle for me.
Mm-hmm.
In grade school, it got me away from the friends on the so-called friends on Romaine, and introduced me to a new group of kids my age, who were always nice, and it was both boys and girls, and I actually got to talk with girls for once and hang out with them, and we had a wonderful group. So I just, in some sense, lived out the rest of the year to get to the lake in the summer and just be relaxed, have fun, feel good, and that continued quite a long time in my life. Gene would often come up on a weekend. My father would, when he finally got a car, would bring her up to see my sister, of course. They were the best friends and still are, and talk to one another almost every day.
That's lovely.
So Gene was in my life even during the summers at Lake Opatcong. I still had this shyness. Excuse me. And Susan asked, if there are some stories. I haven't told this one to many people, but it's symbolic of, I guess I was 12, 13, of my maturity at the time. One of the girls in our gang was named Roberta. One of the guys was named Murph. His name was Eugene Murphy. He had the most amazing boat on the lake. It was called a Lyman boat. They didn't make them of fiberglass then. It was this beautiful mahogany boat with a Mercury 25 horsepower motor, which at that time was out of sight. Excuse me. Well, Murph and Roberta and I, a lot of us would often take one of the boats and go out and just sit in the lake. Lake Opatcong is very large. 7 or 8 miles long, a mile or two across. We go right out in the middle. There wasn't much boat traffic. We'd go out there, just sit and talk, read books. It was just a fun thing. Well, here's Roberta, Murph, and I. And for some reason, we didn't have our bathing suits on that day. And out of the blue, Murph said something like, we said, gee, we have to get in the water. It's so darn hot. And Murph said, Roberta said, oh, we don't have our bathing suits. Murph said, that's fine. We're friends. Let's just go skinny dipping. Now, I never did find out if he was joking or serious, but to me, here was a girl in the boat. All I remember is standing up and blurting out, I just remember, I have to be home. My mother has to do something. And I jumped in off the boat about a mile out in the middle of the lake and started swimming for shore. Murph and Roberta started calling after me, Harry, come back, we'll drive you in. I said, no, it's all right, you guys keep going, whatever you want to do. And I started swimming. I almost drowned. I was a good swimmer, but there were waves, and it was longer than I thought. Another boat, when I was probably halfway to shore, stopped, saw me there, asked if I needed a ride, and here I am wondering if I'm going to drown or not. But I was too embarrassed to say yes. I said, no, I'm fine. Just go on ahead. And I guess they shook their heads. Anyway, I wound up hitting the shore at a point which was absolutely dense forest for miles. And so here I went, trailing through the woods, barefoot, dust coming on, cutting my feet up. Thinking I'm going to die. I didn't drown, but I'm going to die in the forest, and that no one will ever find me.
Yeah.
And finally, I started hearing some car horns, and Murph and Roberta had gone back figured out what happened and had some of the adults in the family driving along the roads, honking their horn and calling for me. Uh-huh. So here I finally stumbled out of the woods, so embarrassed. I said, I'm never going down to the lake again. I'm going to hide my hat in the house so no one will ever see me. But everyone, even the adults, it was a small summer community that gathered there at Davis Cove. And all of the houses, every single one, were empty the rest of the year. They were all summer places that people would come up and spend the summers at.
Yeah.
And we all knew one another and were very friendly.
Yeah.
And I guess they got together and said, let's not make him feel more of an ass than he already is. And so I was treated as somewhat of a hero, even though I can't remember why, what story they ginned up.
That would be nice, a hero. Okay.
Susan prompted me to something, say something I told her off the record. And again, I can't ever let my mom hear this. but as I mentioned, I'd be at track meets on Saturdays and basketball games on Sundays, and I'd often have an audience. Since my father was so interested in sports, I mean, he just followed everything I did in sports. And often on a Saturday or Sunday, here he would come tripping in out to the track in the stands or into the basketball court. With many of his friends from Balbo's Tavern. They were all feeling good. I had a very loud audience participating in everything I did, and I would try to ignore, pretend I didn't know who they were calling out for. But it was part of my life.
Yeah.
My father, being a part-timer in the Jersey City Recreation Department, was also an official at all of the track meets, high school track meets. So he was always there. And I remember when my freshman year, when I was running cross-country, he'd always be stationed at the point where we came out of the grassy, woodsy path area of the park, just about to hit the track where we had a quarter of a mile to finish up the cross-country event. And he'd be there and just yelling so loud, and I mean, I would get this jolt of adrenaline for my last quarter mile. I'm not sure, just because he was so enthusiastic, or I was afraid he's going to give me hell if I didn't win the race. But he was a fixture at all of the track meets.
Definitely, it was significant to him. I'm sure he was very proud.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very nice. Matt, was there any science?
Okay, let me tell you just that.
Okay.
Susan prompted me again about high school. I mentioned math, and she asked me, what about the other sciences in high school? I took biology. I avoided physics and chemistry because everyone said they were so difficult, and none of my basketball chums and track team chums ever took those difficult courses. So that was interesting, winding up a physics major later on. One other footnote about high school and Mr. McGee, the French teacher. He was one of my awakening points, too. He had many conversations, and he wasn't afraid to embarrass you. And at the time, I just thought it was horrible of him to do that. In later life, I realized what he was doing. He was trying to wake me and others up. And for some reason, in the French class, I think we were talking about the War of 1812. I mean, not the War of 1812, Napoleon's invasion of Russia, mm-hmm. and the French connection there, and had brought in a recording of Tchaikovsky's 1812 overture and played it. I had never heard it before. I mean, it was thrilling. I couldn't believe music could be this good. I didn't know classical music existed. And after he played it, he turned to me and he said, Monsieur Albers, what did you think of that 1812 overture? I said, it was great. He said, have you gone to any performances, symphony? I said, no. He said, have you ever heard it before? I said, no. And he just shook his head, tsk, tsk, TISC. Mm-hmm. And went into this long lecture about students should be aware of other things in life. And just made me feel about 2 inches high because of my shortcomings in knowledge. But it stayed with me. It stayed with me, and was one of the reasons that when I finally started finding out who I was, that was one of the prompts that I had.